Where's some hornet's nest?
Okay, this is board time Wednesday, the 15th of October at 1:59. We're starting a minute early. Commissioner Mielke is absent today, so Commissioner David Medora, the vice chair, will be officiating the meeting. First item on the agenda is typical is approval of minutes from October 8th.
And I'm good with them.
So moved.
Okay, so we have a motion to approve the minutes for October 8th. Any discussion? Okay, I'll second that motion. And
aye.
All in favor? Aye. Okay, so the minutes are approved.
Here's the official one.
Okay. Moving right along here. Okay.
You want to leave?
Item 1.2, that's Tom Mielke's item, so I'm just going to strike that for now.
You want to just give an update on where the approach we're taking?
And sure. Peter and I have spoken a little bit. I think he would like us to consider some objective standards that Mark can use when he's reviewing exceptions, people who, because on the one hand, the board's made it clear that they don't want to have to go in and bargain this issue, that we don't want to change the policy. We just want to provide exemptions that allow people to carry as they request and provide some justification. Peter's concern is that we have some predictable mechanism so that somebody knows before they come in what the chances are that they're going to have one granted. And there are certainly some issues with that. Certainly the advantage to doing is where you have fairly mechanical standards, it makes it predictable and reliable. The problem is if it's too big, you include a bigger net. If it's too small, you exclude. And so we'll spend a little bit of time trying to craft that. But there's certainly some merit to keep some objectivity in how Mark does his analysis. So
okay.
This is just an update. It just came to me. I think we talked about it yesterday, and so I told him it'd probably be before Friday before I could even look at it. Just as an update, I'll let you know we finished the panhandler ordinance for street solicitors on the public roadway, and
oh, good.
We crafted it so that it wouldn't cover people on the sidewalk, thus the Girl Scout lemonade stand thing wouldn't be an issue. But that'll be coming out, and we're
great.
Trying to catch up with the things that we've got pending for you.
Okay. In other words, you're looking for the first opportunity to put it, to bring it forward.
Yes.
It's great. Sounds good. Anything else, Chris?
No. Not for me.
Okay.
Okay, then on to 1.3, surface mining overlay.
We're flying. Well, Chris Cook's here. We're right at two. Marty and Gordy might show up, but I can
thank
cover
you, Chris.
This. So, you guys all think back to our work session. We had a work session on the surface mining overlay, and we're getting into the development code standards and policies in the comprehensive plan. We had some citizens from Livingston Mountain there. They interacted with us at that work session. They had some changes. We have since the board. So at that work session, the board gave us direction to meet with both sides, meet with the citizens, take their changes and their drafts into consideration, see what we could do to merge them within what we had, and then also meet with the mining and quarry interests, see what their reaction was to those proposed changes and try to merge them in. So as a staff, we've done that. We met with Livingston Mountain folks.
Twice.
I feel like I don't feel like it. According to them, we've gotten everything built into the current draft ordinance that they wanted, except one little piece we have a bit of a difference on that has to do with expansions of current mines in rural areas, which we're close on that. We just have a difference, I think, of opinion between the staff and the citizens on that, and I think the board should probably decide where to go.
What I would suggest is that you bring both options forward so we can see what Party A is wanting, what Party B is wanting, and then so it's concisely stated either way, both ways, should I say.
Absolutely. So yesterday, the reason we threw this on here and brought it today is because yesterday we had what I consider a successful meeting with the mining quarry interests. We sent out an invite to all of them. We had some of them come. Staff was there. We went through the sections of the proposed ordinance. The two major sections, what we talked about and pointed out to them that they would care about in terms of changes from then to now have to do with going from what would be a permitted use for extraction and quarrying and operating to a conditional use. That's a pretty big change. And the other one was the monitoring enforcement requirements that we built into the ordinance. How are we going to follow up and how are we going to track all these conditions and make sure they're being met? There's new language for that. So they were there. They looked at the language. They offered us comments. Also, we have a 10-page document from Stordahl's attorney. So we used that a bit as a bit of a guide because I think there was some good guidance in there and some good questions and language suggested. So we talked to them about that. We handed copies of that out. Mm-hmm. And so I think we have a meeting set up next week as a staff again to sort of absorb the mining interest comments that we heard yesterday and through the document received from Stordahl into the ordinance. And then we've got some dates on the calendar for Planning Commission and for you all to see that final product mm-hmm. and approve it or not. One big thing to consider is that we need to get this done before January 1 mm-hmm. or it gets pushed to the comp plan update in 16. I think mm-hmm. everybody...
Which complicates Oliver's life dramatically.
Well, because we've done so much work to get it this far. So mm-hmm. we are pushing for those Planning Commission and board hearings in November to hopefully get to a consensus on it. Mm-hmm. And then it's that's done, we can set it aside and, mm-hmm. and move forward with all the rest of the things that have to happen in the comprehensive plan update in 2016. So that's where we are. We're meeting as a staff next week, Planning Commission, and then back to you guys. And I think we're gonna have a very well compromised document.
That's great.
Cross
your fingers.
Tell me, is this an accurate summary of what you just said? You got all the parties in, to weigh in, and you have consensus on everything except one little point.
Well,
no.
We have one more step to go. So we got 100% of the way there with everything but one little piece around expansion of existing quarries in rural zones.
Isn't that what I just said?
Yes.
That's only with the neighbors.
That's with the neighbors. Now
that doesn't include the industry.
We've taken in the industry comments. And we see some areas where we believe we can agree with them and build that in.
Okay.
There may be some other areas where we don't agree.
Okay.
And then we've got to do one more kind of
let
the citizens, the residents, see the final product. Okay. So we're going to get into that hearing, and I feel like we're going to be in the 80-85% range with everybody in the room.
Okay.
But the board's going to have to work through the rest of it.
Yeah, and thank you for all that work. And thank you, Chris, for... I expect this has been a challenge to do.
For everybody, it's been...
Yeah.
It's been a lot of work, but it's been
so
good.
That's just for Livingston, that's not for you.
No, this is for
the
whole thing. The whole thing, everybody.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
the people up at Livingston, the people at Yakult, you had both their public input into it.
And we used a lot of our... I used and the other staff members used a lot of our experience at Yakult for the monitoring enforcement sections, you know, I think, and just how we've seen that kind
okay.
of develop over time. So, we'll get as far as we can. And so the next step is next week we need to pull in the quarrying interest and their reaction and their comments to our current ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
Put as much of that in there as we can.
To
the extent we think it's appropriate, put as much of that into the ordinance without upsetting the apple cart with the citizens, and then get that package forward to you guys.
First of all, the track record that you've developed so far sounds really good. What I would encourage you to do is before we get to that first hearing, you will have already had both parties weigh in on both things, and if you end up with item 1, 2, and 3 or whatever those are, that says we got everything that's indisputable except these exceptions, and you list which way party A wants, which way party B wants, and then come up with a C, which is your best guess as a proposed compromise that we, so in other words, set us up so that we're not having to sort all this out there.
Yeah.
You do as much as you can to the point where they're not going to agree if you end up with something that you don't have consensus, and then we'll just have to make a call on those things that you don't have consensus. But those would be just the exceptional leftovers.
Yeah.
Well, at some point, I think there will be things that there aren't, that there is not consensus on, and where staff comes down on either one side or the other.
Yeah.
And we'll let you know what those are and why we...
Staff's recommendation, in other words.
Well,
that makes the most sense.
Yeah, well, there's really three parts. One, to concisely state the issue and the way that the industry wants it, the way that the residents want it, and some kind of a suggestion as a possible compromise.
Well, in some cases, you're going
to... So all three.
In some cases, compromise is impossible because you have an off-on switch, not a rheostat.
Yeah.
Well, and my take is that the aggregate folks may not be all the same on the same page relative to, okay, it's a conditional use permit. Stordahl's attorney seems to concede to, okay, it's a conditional use permit.
With,
the aggregate people that we
had
in the meeting were very adverse to it being a conditional use permit. So even in the mining, with the mining stakeholders, they're not all on the same page, or they're not all conceding in the same manner.
Mm-hmm. Well, two of them were adverse to
it. Two of them.
The other two,
and
really
two meetings to get it all resolved.
We'll get
as much
there.
As you can.
We'll get it.
So thank you very much for all that hard work on that. And what I'm thinking is that so that everybody knows their points are made, and it's like, there it is, there's the ordinance. As it starts out with some kind of proposal, and here's the leftovers, view A, view B, and it's like, those are the ones we have to worry about, and if we don't hear, if it's not listed in the differences kind of a sheet.
Now you don't want to have to hunt for it. You want it laid out nice, neat, and tidy.
We don't want to
expedite things.
Yep. So in other words, set us up to streamline the process and focus on the things that really need to be addressed. Great work. Thanks.
So our question is timing.
I told him by the end of the year.
We stop having hearings on the 16th of December.
Right. I have a couple of options from Rebecca as to when we can do this. And you understand if we don't get it done this year, it rolls to the comp plan.
And we need to be able to have the opportunity to extend from one meeting to at least an extra meeting. We don't, because the idea of having to get it done in one meeting and it's like, that's it?
Well,
it's not too healthy.
We have to meet well before the 16th of December because that's our last opportunity this fiscal year to get
back
it done.
So whatever public notice needs to happen, whatever preparation needs to happen.
Your first hearing date option is November 25th after the Planning Commission hears it on the 20th.
Okay, we better notice it. Cause
we can do that. It's just a question of what's your preference for when you want to finish this.
Sooner the better.
We've already asked the questions.
Sooner the better.
Okay.
And do what you can to get them on the same page as much as you can.
Yeah.
Like you have. Great. Good work. Look forward to it. We'll get her done.
You're going to lay the...
You heard it here, folks.
You're going to lay A and B out on a piece of paper so everybody understands it.
Yeah, and we'll talk about it.
And share that with all the parties.
The citizen group, up at Livingston, they're very well organized, and they go through things very professionally. Yep. So they're going to go through this.
Right.
My assumption is they're going to go through this very meticulously,
They
will tell us yay or nay on things, and we can take that.
And I assume there's a page, a web page, where this is laid out, and they can see what's the draft proposal and their differences sheet, the A, B, and so that they can provide feedback. So we'll facilitate all that communication and maximize the availability of everybody having access to that.
Yeah, Gordy has the latest consensus version on the webpage now.
On the webpage are the Planning Commission recommendations, then what Livingston Mountain said, then what we've proposed, and we'll update what we proposed based on the meeting we had yesterday.
And you're going to add to that the industry as well?
That's the meeting we had yesterday.
Oh, fabulous. Great. Yes. Okay.
Surface mining overlay.
Great. Good job. What more could you do, right?
Teach you how to use your mute button. No, sorry.
Actually, that was Jim Vanling, which is on my surface mining not service mining, my other agenda item anyway.
Oh, the logging business?
Well, Sumania County. But I'll let that take its turn. What else we got? That's all.
That, as far as scheduled subject matter, that's what we have for today. So we're on to...
You don't need me for anything?
Thank you, Marty.
Thank you.
No, you're good.
So, Commissioner Barnes, you have the floor.
David, you got a communication from the Skamania County Commissioner?
Yes.
And I don't see anything. I read this thing over pretty carefully. I don't see anywhere they contacted either letters to Murray, Cantwell, or Herrera Butler. They should be sending letters, communications to them, asking for their help and get the letter back saying what they're willing to do, because I know that Cantwell has been working really hard on this forest thing, cutting the timber and that. I mean, she's been involved in that for pretty hot and heavy for the last several years. So
this must be related to the PILT money and the...
Yeah.
I know this.
So what I would encourage you to do Chris Grong's contact information there.
Yeah.
Is go ahead and have a conversation with him.
Yeah, I will. I'll call him.
Encourage him, because he's looking to see ideas he hasn't thought of, what can they do, and it sounds like you just had a couple things you could share.
But if you don't have direct communications with the two senators and the congressman in this that controls this area, well, he's actually got two congressmen. He's got the congressman from Yakima, which is the one that's retiring, get ready to leave.
Okay.
Where?
Up Yakima, that covers Yakima and comes down to Warshugel now.
You'll know.
He's got two congressmen that he needs to send letters to, communication, get letters back from them.
Good.
Putting heat on them, and I'll call him and tell him he needs
Terrific.
To do that.
Yep. I know Chris Sprong very well.
Yeah.
He and I serve on two governing boards together, the Southwest Washington Aging and Disabilities and the RSN, the Southwest Washington Behavioral Health. He is working very hard to make ends meet at that county. He's got high respect for him. And anytime a neighboring county asks for help, and they're declaring a state of emergency because of the stress they're suffering, and this is actually sent to us by the Washington Association of Counties. I think us being their nearest neighbor, we'll do what we can. We should do what we can.
Yeah.
And as we learn a little bit more about this, because I just got this about an hour ago or so, I think it's important that, first of all, find out, is this a valid case? If this is so, then we ought to consider also passing a resolution of support or whatever we can do, whatever the appropriate thing is that says we stand by our neighbor. If they have a valid case... If they don't have a valid case, let's find out how it's not valid.
The only other suggestion I would make to him, he needs to be a little bit more discreet about how he puts his resolution together with the comments he makes about the people he's trying to deal with.
It was strongly worded.
I know that's not too good. So the other one is, I got a communication just a little while ago from Mr. Barber, and saying he wants some... us to rethink our thing on your
marijuana?
Collective gardens. I'll take it. I work with him, and I owe him a phone call.
So
I'll deal with him. He wants to come in and talk ahead of the hearing, so
yeah,
I don't have a problem
right,
with that.
Right. And I know he talked to Chrissy. Chris, the attorney, talked to him there Tuesday for quite a while.
He just
sent that, and the other two things to do I had laying on my desk was, there's been a lot of conversation with Tom about moving the kids into a commercial building.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got to thinking, we've got all kinds of problems out at Daybreak with that piece of property that the county owns out there,
okay.
This thing. And maybe what we should be doing is looking at taking this back from the people that are there that are not doing what they're supposed to be doing, and make a good facility out there for these individuals that the county already owns the property. Go in there, it's a big enough house that it would be twice the amount of room that they currently have in this facility here.
What's it being used for now?
It's Grace Ministries, I think, is the name of it. It's a recovery house for women in crisis.
Yeah.
And they're only using part of it? There's vacancy there?
No, they're using the whole thing, but they've got all kinds of code violations. I think we've rented it to them on a long-term lease for like $1 a year. But they're storing debris out there. They're running a recycled facility. They've been notified repeatedly by code enforcement that they need to clean up and to get rid of.
They're hiding the garbage and
things they have out there.
Instead of taking
They got shipping containers and broken down vehicles and you name
it. So not the best steward over the property.
Why don't we have Laura? Why don't we have Laura take a look at it?
Yeah, that'd be fine. Well, first of all, we'd have to have the youth house management look at the facility and see if it's suitable. It's out in what is it, 319th or something?
Yeah, it's right there off of Daybreak.
Yeah, it's pretty far north, and nice, you know, whether or not all the kids could easily commute to and from that site would be a question.
Well, we have a lease with the youth house currently. Mm-hmm. How long does that run?
Year.
So we have some time. Until
next October.
We have some time to look at it because we have a lease now.
But give them a chance to clean it up just like you did with the park across the
classroom. Sounds good. Sounds good.
Same thing.
Sure. Yeah, and a lot of nice open space around it, too.
Camp Hope, you mean?
Yeah. Uh-huh. You can make it into the same similar type situation. The other last thing I got to talk about, I had a couple people that like Heritage Farm out there, our property. I went to the Korean War Veterans thing today. A lot of those folks have been hiking, walking up around where the indigent graves are at, up there where they have all those trails in
that
cemetery. And I've been up there several times at different times in my lifetime. And it probably has one of the most spectacular views of the river and over into Oregon and towards the mountain and everything. And I know at one time we built a tower for the 50th anniversary of the Kaiser Shipyard. Building trades put that all together, and I would think that maybe at some point in time we ought to look about putting some kind of a monument up there for these people that were the original settlers that come here. They got this little nameplate on there to put it up there with some kind of a thing like that tower that they have down at Astoria where you can look out and maybe give it to the Carr County Historical Museum as a project to look about doing something with that piece of land rather than just see it set up there and where more people would go up there and look at it and have, well, just like over at the one over Portland that you could look out over the river.
Crown Point?
Yes. Yeah.
Have you ever been up the tower on the hill in Astoria?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, beautiful. Yeah. And that would be something maybe not... You can't do it immediately, but I think if you got a group of people and said a charge to the Historical Society, how would you guys like to do something to dedicate it in behalf of these folks?
It's a matter of leadership and finding the right way and the right funding. Possibly there's some
grant money
or something.
I'm quite sure there's grant money.
So that sounds like a good vision, Mr. Vision Birth there.
So I thought that this older gentleman, he said, I used to ride horses up there and I go through there and stop and the horse would eat grass off of those graves and everything like that. And here's a little teeny marker and some of them are unmarked.
Commissioner, interesting that you should mention that because the master plan for the Heritage Farm, this is the ridge.
Yeah.
Called for the construction.
Yeah, I brought that up to Mark Bold about 12 years ago.
Yeah, well, this master plan was put together, 2009. The whole thing is it's a great master plan, but building a trail system like that would cost quite a bit of money. But the plan did call for the construction of a structure there, and then certainly a memorial could be tied into it.
And
but if we could get free labor and materials from the labor industry, and we could
And volunteers to help construct a trail. The trail at least can be a starting point.
And it wouldn't have to be this fancy thing. It could be
just take the same path.
We already have a road. Not a road per se, but certainly a well-worn path that could continue up the hill.
Mm-hmm.
a lot of structures like that right now with the pre-stressed stuff. If you do go to one of these outfits that build the stuff pre-stressed, they can put the foundation in, and all they'd have to do is just go up there with the truck and a crane, lift the structure up in the end.
And drop it down and just have bolts coming out of the foundation.
Right. That's kind of related to the parks, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we've been talking
with parks about taking this over.
What I'm thinking is that the Parks Advisory Board, you can have them brainstorm a little bit about what could be done to at least get started with some kind of a volunteer-created trail out there and kind of just simply move in the direction citizens who are just doesn't cost anything.
We had that fellow at Tri Mountain who wanted to repaint all the little stones. Yeah, he actually did it. We provided the paint, but he provided the labor, and they repainted all the hole markers where you have the number of the hole.
Oh, is that
and
right?
And the par number, you know,
like 64,
par count.
Like 64 or 65 markers or something like that.
Well, it depends what you...
I'm speaking of the markers at Tri Mountain Golf Course.
Oh, okay.
You know, I thought you were talking about the number of strokes.
Yeah, hole number one, par four.
I thought we were still talking about the thing up on the mountain.
Now, there was a study done of that cemetery. They used ground-penetrating radar, and they've got little markers where all the... Where all the grave sites are. Mm-hmm. And at some point, we were... the master plan calls for us to move a fence and to fence in the cemetery and to put, you know, benches there and a nice little entryway in there.
I think that's great.
It's just a matter of resources.
I mentioned to Mark about 12 years ago, told me out of Mark Holt.
Huh?
And I mentioned to Mark about 12 years ago that they ought to be doing something with that. In fact, I talked to Betty Sue Morris when she was still a commissioner in that, but after I just had so many things on my plate, forgot about it. So this elderly gentleman jumping today.
Well, it sounds like we have so many volunteers. Was it Karen Llewellyn, volunteer coordinator and the Parks Advisory Board?
Amazing that you should mention Karen Llewellyn, because following this meeting, Karen and Heath and Bill Bierke are coming here and we're going to talk volunteer management.
Oh. That's great.
You looking at my calendar or something?
I'm aware that they are amazing people. And we have so many people that want to volunteer and make a difference at least moving in the direction of progress doesn't necessarily translate to cost. Doesn't necessarily translate to money or much money, because those volunteers can do so much. So yeah, that's great. So you're gonna work together to see what you can do to bring.
Well, I'll have a discussion with Heath and Commissioner Barnes. You're welcome to sit in on that meeting to begin with, if you'd like.
Great. More power to you, sir.
Okay.
So, okay.
What else you got?
That it?
Just get the day over.
Okay. The rural business, our ordinance on rural businesses.
Oh, I saw.
Yeah. I just wanted to say
right here. Go ahead.
The Department of Commerce, there's a fellow up there, Terry Lawhead, who I'd love to be able to, it's my plan when I get back to the office, to forward a copy of our current home ordinance to him and let him go over it and suggest back to us, because he knows state law, he knows GMA, he knows what it would be appropriate when it comes to our ability to be as business friendly as we can and still be within the legal limits of law. And so that's my little task here.
Okay, well, we can get you the current, and there's also a draft floating around of how it's going to look if we remove the limit.
I have it. That's my highlighting.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah.
That was kind of a pre-draft that I came up with.
Yeah.
Chris,
so the reason I bring it up here is because that 180-day notice time, if we haven't already somehow given notice to start that clock so that we're every day is moving us toward the goal, that I would like to. And there's two ways I can imagine that could work. One is that we refine and we come up with very specific, exacting language. This is exactly what we propose, and then we want comment on that. And that could take that would means we won't be able to give notice until we get through that whole process. That's not the way I can imagine to move the ball down the field. Instead, what I'd like to be able to do is to submit our current ordinance as it is and just simply keep our notice as general as can be that says that we are considering changing each of these parameters or this substantially, and we welcome all the comment. And so give notice is done, and the time marches by, and it's our friend instead of our enemy. Can we do that?
Well, let me first find out if Chris gave him notice. Yeah, but certainly we'll undertake that if we haven't already done it.
Mm-hmm. Could I ask a question on that, then, Mr.
Sure.
Chairman? If I'd look that document over, and like I said, when is the community a community? There are certain communities or certain areas in Clark County that I go by quite frequently that have gates on them. Would this ordinance allow anybody to move close to one of those gated communities and that have rules and regulations that say
CCNRs.
They can't have this, they can't have that, they can't do that.
Inside that community.
Inside that community, but that does not precede either county law, state law, or federal law. That only has homeowners. That's a homeowner law. And that. So I'm concerned that we're going to segregate Clark County out and say that Ed Barnes, I live in a gated area. Nobody can get close to me with a marijuana operation or electrical contracting or a beauty parlor or anything else like that. But somebody else that's not in a gated community or an area that's not protected, you could do anything you want to do in that area, auto body shop or anything else. I think we got to need to be really careful because there's a whole lot of folks out there I think are going to upset immensely when they find out that anybody can start a business up right next door to them and put anything in there they want to put, whether it's a massage parlor or whether it's a...
But Commissioner Barnes, I think Chris Horn went to great lengths to remind the board that there are a litany of other limitations. The percentage of your property that can be devoted to the business, it has to be an accessory use. Right. Yeah. So if you have a one-acre parcel and you have a house in the middle of it, and you take the rest of it and devote it to a business, then you're violating the code anyway, and you shouldn't be allowed to do that.
Well, they're doing that all over the county now.
Well, if you have a five-acre parcel and you have 15 employees come and park their cars, get in trucks, and then leave and go do work here, there, and everywhere...
But if they're next door to your house and they do that
every
morning or every night or every noon, come in at noon to pick up parts.
Yeah, I wouldn't like
it. Or at your house, you wouldn't like it either. So, I mean, need to be...
Balanced.
Yeah. And that's what I think we're seeking balance.
Okay.
Yes.
So, okay, I'm going to go see Chris the minute we adjourn. I will ask him whether he's given notice, and if he hasn't, then...
Yeah, can you let us know?
Yeah.
And the question is there, what is the minimum we need to provide in order to give
clock.
Notice? Because I don't want to...
Yeah, I got it.
Okay.
And also, Commissioner, wouldn't the question be, can this person be the one that provides the comment back to us that the state is required to give? We're giving them 180 days to provide us back comments. So is this the person?
Oh,
well, what Chris said was, if we give them 180 days, which is required by law, and they give us their full input in 5 days, mm-hmm. clock keeps ticking. The 180-day clock doesn't stop.
Really?
That's what Chris said.
Can we have Chris
we talked about it.
Email a copy of that reference. So we know where is that route. Where in state law does it say that?
So we still have to wait for 180 days to enact
just.
That's what
but
Chris
it also
said.
Gives anybody else the opportunity to comment on that.
Yeah, and point. I'm not challenging it. I just want to make sure we go with. We know what the law says is that we're in full compliance. Mm-hmm. I was glad to hear that the 6th Street vacation over there north of Life Point Church and Costco over there, that. That's moving along, but there's two parts to that. The road vacation is one part. The other part was the no parking signs.
Right.
And the no parking signs, I assume, can happen sooner.
Well, right. if we're going to vacate the road, mm-hmm. we don't want to waste money putting county signs on a road that very shortly won't be a county road.
Well, what's very shortly?
I think the vacation process was expected to take months.
Okay.
I don't know, that was my impression.
We talked to Pam Mason and see how.
So let's find out if it's going to be just a matter of weeks. Yeah. Then we're.
Karen was working on the signs issue, and we touched on that last week in board time about the issue we'd mm-hmm. had previously at WSU and the issues mm-hmm. with that. So she's aware of those issues, and she's also working with the neighbors and expects okay. to have that proposal resolved and to the board within 30 days.
Okay, so you're right in that one, and we just want to make sure that mm-hmm. we're when a whole neighborhood, and it's basically 100% of those citizens, are asking us for relief, mm-hmm. that we move it along as best we can. Because
school
that's
parking too, one on the school parking.
This is the one where they're yeah, parking in the neighborhood instead of the school. Yes.
Yeah, right.
Okay. That's all I have. And Axel, do you have anything?
Not really. That just a reminder. I think you guys are all up to speed. There's the big shakeout tomorrow. I don't know the exact time, but we're gonna.
Yeah.
We're participating.
It's October 16th, and it occurs at 10:16.
You'd be under your desk at 10:16.
Yeah.
No, so that's what you used to have to do. Now we're gonna evacuate the building.
Oh yeah.
First, you have to do the.
Stop, drop, and roll.
Yeah, what kind of? That's a fire thing. Yeah. You have to get under something, then you have to stand around and talk about proceed, how do we proceed if there's a, you know, the door is blocked, and at about 10:22, I think it is, will be the evacuation message that comes up on your computer. Then you go.
Will there be audible alarms as well?
I asked Mark Wilson that question. I would prefer that. That
it'd be a surprise.
Hmm?
That'd be a surprise.
Well, no, I.
Well, that'd be a surprise.
I've exempted the board commissioners from the drill because they are interviewing arts commission people right in the middle of that, and I don't want them to evacuate into the rain if it's raining.
Well.
The joint lobby is exempted. They're allowed to keep a skeleton crew on to continue serving the public, and I am having a meeting in the back with department directors, and I'm exempting that group. So.
Yeah. So we figure we can.
If you want an exemption, it's $10.
The rest of us will be.
We can finish our interview under the table. That's
there you
fine.
You never know when it could happen. So.
Yeah, so the question is, will there be an alarm?
I asked Mark that question before this meeting. I will follow up with him and let you know.
In a real earthquake, would there be an alarm?
Hopefully, probably.
Well, the alarm can be triggered manually.
It's the fire alarm, right?
Yeah, it's a fire alarm. You just
and that's all we use it for is fire, right?
If you want to evacuate the building, you, for whatever cause, let's say you have a natural gas leak and the building's filling up
fire.
With natural gas, you would it's not a fire until somebody
until you get
until
that first flame.
A spark. But
until there's a spark from the fire alarm.
But, but if it's turning into a big bomb because there's a gas leak and we need people out of the building, you could run the alarm to get people out. There will likely be a little deal on your computer.
Yes, and that I think has an audible
yeah,
something or other.
Yeah, it pops up and yells at you.
So,
okay. So anyway, you got it, and yep, we'll be aware of it. Thank you. By the way, related to emergencies, with the Ebola potential threat, we never know what the scoop is. Someone had sent a. A news article, and I'm trying to remember what the county in Texas or someplace had declared, had to modify their code so that they equipped their public health officer to be able to somehow take immediate action if necessary. And they, without that, whoever was carrying it, they didn't have the authority to somehow say, you know, isolate that person. So I sent forward that on to Dr. Melnick and asked him, if he had the necessary means, if in his judgment he needed to act in order to protect the public from what in his judgment is a case of Ebola. And he felt like he's fine. He has all the authority he needs in order to respond. So just want to stay tuned because we don't know what's going to happen here in the future. If we get something in Portland or in Clark County.
Yeah.
We want to make sure that we're proactive. We thought through it ahead of time.
As it relates to the Ebola subject, Dr. Melnick is convening a group of key players that would be called upon to act in the event that Ebola appears in this county,
mm-hmm.
just to do some preemptive planning, mm-hmm. and so that we're not caught flat-footed,
yeah.
like other jurisdictions around the country have
yeah.
been.
And they have their proper isolation kinds of equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And
I heard two things on the radio this morning, that apparently the CDC director said if another case pops up in another city, they will have a CDC team on the ground in that place in a matter of hours, and that they are discussing the possibility of designating a number of medical institutions around the country to be trained and or be better trained to only send Ebola patients to those particular hospitals because the protocol to protect yourself is so difficult
mm-hmm.
that might have been what happened in Texas, that mm-hmm. it infect the other person or mm-hmm. people, and so that they're thinking to keep a limited number of hospitals that would be designated as Ebola
yep.
hospital.
Thank you for that.
Well, supposedly the gal's dog is still in quarantine.
The dog?
Yeah, they were gonna euthanize it, but they changed their minds, I guess.
They're still in quarantine, though, so they don't know if the animals can transport it or not. But it's still in quarantine according to the news last night.
Huh. So anything else, Axel?
I don't think so.
Peter, you have anything?
No, sir.
Okay. Holly, anything?
That's my Ebola update.
Okay. Mark?
No, I'm good, sir.
Okay. I think we're wrapped up. Thank you very much.
Okay. 41 minutes, 34 seconds. Well done, sir.